It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh, we're living that dream and taking you with us. Good morning, it's Sports Saturday on 101.3, The Game and 101.3thegame.com. 802-655-6672 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us on the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number. So I'm going to say it again. 802-655-6672. I am your host, Jeff Paul. My guy's back. This is a busy man. I mean, this is a guy that got, you were on.
Back.
He's back. Our good friend, my good friend. Award-winning Burlington Free Press sports writer Austin Danforth, you had a busy week, my man. It's good
to
see you.
It's good. It's good to be here.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, I mean, you covering the Vermont Amateur all week down at Stowe Country Club. And you saw some pretty intriguing golf this week.
It ends up like 3 days later. They play 72 holes. I'm covering all of them. Ends up feeling like I was in a football game, running around with cameras and crouching down and all this, that, and the other thing. But yeah, it was a fantastic week at Stowe Country Club. Your fireworks. I figured it was going to be a pretty low winning score. I knew the course. I played it. Lots of birdies. Five par fives. All of them are reachable in two. And I kind of thought before the week, I was like, my guess for the winning score was going to be probably 10 to 12 under. I think I set it at 11. And then Garen comes through at 15 under. Corey Josefiak, a caddy friend of mine from back in the day, he was 14 under. Both those two scores, best scores in tournament history, I'm pretty sure. I look back at least 25 years, there was nothing close to it. And when you look at the trends in golf, like amateur golf specifically, guys just didn't go as low as frequently back then. So it stands to reason that was one of the probably the most electric tournaments in the 114 years of the event.
Yeah, congratulations to Garen Poirier, a Rutland Country Club member, and just compelling golf. He's going to join us today, actually, here on the show at about 11:05 this morning, talk about what it's like to be in a situation like that. And the cool story about Garen, that's why I'm looking forward to talking to him, will be he had up to a 10-stroke lead going in the last day, correct? So during the day, he's playing this tournament with a 10-stroke lead, and slowly but surely, the player behind him, Corey Josefiak, comes roaring back, and it comes down to a huge putt on the 18th, because Josefiak's eagles the 18.
Yeah.
It's such compelling golf. To go from a 10-stroke lead with maybe 2 hours left to play this thing, and you think, okay, I'm just going to cruise into it, and the player next to you is rolling. I mean, you have to have some serious mental fortitude to keep your composure in those situations, and Garen had the ability to do it.
Yeah, and we'll get into it with him later, but he was telling me afterward, he told his caddy on Thursday, this is why you build a lead. He'd gotten to 18 under par during the morning round on Thursday. They play 36 on the last day. He was 18 under par with like three holes to go, came back to the field. Corey got a couple back, so it was, I think, six shots to start the last round, led by as many as seven, got down to four with two to go. Corey Josefiak birdies the 17th to get it to three. He comes over to me after that, and he's a consummate, just a good sportsman, comes over and he's like, "So is anybody close? Like, I don't expect anything crazy to happen. I just want to know if I can congratulate him if nobody's close." Because he's going to win. You don't expect him to give it all away on the last hole. But he knew he had to do something crazy. And so he steps up, rips driver, puts it 25 feet from the pin, rolls in the putt. Garen has to make a uncomfortable par save from off the green. So, but he did it anyway, knocked in the two-footer to win it. And he'd been trying for a long time, and You could see it really meant a lot to him.
Well, it's going to be a great story, and it was a great story. It'd be a great interview at 11:05 today, so don't go anywhere. Also, we've got Mark Murphy, Celtic Insider, coming on. Listen, there's a lot of talk about the Celtics potentially winning a championship when this season gets going again. The Celtics seem to be the sweethearts of the NBA, and they've got one of the best players in the league. People think that he's the next big thing, you know, and Jason Tatum, so it's going to be fun to talk to Mark Murphy about that. And a really cool thing happening at 11:20. So some sad stuff coming out of ESPN this week. Mike Golic is no longer going to be a part of the morning rotation for ESPN, which is, you know, and when we're going to talk about that as well, I mean, some of the, it's kind of shocking because it kind of came out of nowhere. There was no announcement. And Mike Golic is one of, whether like him or not, I mean, he, and I really like Mike Golic. I think, you know, he's one of the, he's the face. I mean, when you think of sports radio, I guess, of this era, I mean, Mike Golic is the guy. I guess Mike Green, the Mike and Mike in the Morning Show, was an iconic show. It looks like in August, Mike Golic will not be back at some point in August. So I thought it'd be cool to talk to someone who's worked with him. And our former producer here, Ryan Matlack, who is now a radio producer for ESPN down in Bristol, has worked with Mike Golic. So he's going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about his time here in Vermont and Burlington and what he's doing now at ESPN. But it, kind of a sad situation to see an end of an era like Mike Golic coming off the air.
Yeah, it was weird to see their show end as it did, because that was sort of a pillar of ESPN for at least a decade plus. And you think what they did as a duo, Mike and Mike, they, like, it was so popular on the radio, they had to simulcast it on TV, and it carried hours of television. And it was like, when you think of like sports radio duos, you got Mike and the Mad Dog in New York City. That's, I mean, Francesa and Chris Russo, they put, you know, really put sports radio on the map.
Yep.
And then, you know, probably the second wave of it, you got Mike and Mike. I think
Francesca and the Mad Dog were like, they were more local. I mean, they were, if you didn't, and they were not, we're in a different world back then.
But they were so big locally that it changed the game for everybody.
Totally agree. And still, I think that's one of the best, that's the best show ever to be on the radio for me. What Francesca and Russo had were fantastic. But when Mike and Mike, you know, say for this era, I mean, for our era, I would say, you know, maybe, I mean, even my age, you know, that you just didn't put the TV on in the morning without putting on Mike and Mike. That's just what you did. It was like brushing your teeth in the morning and putting on Mike and Mike in the morning. So it'll be interesting to talk to Ryan about that. Kind of a sad, when I see guys like this kind of move on, you know, it's sad for me because it's end of eras. And, I always hate to see that stuff. So big show ahead of us today. Aaron, I haven't said good morning to you yet. Aaron Wells, great job with the sports update this morning, my man. And I like the fact that you used a little golf this morning, which you never do. So I appreciate that.
I've been dying to get more local stories back in the updates.
That's exactly.
Although I swear the name Josefiak almost got me.
You got the guy that knows how to say it to your left.
Exactly. Yep. See, we got the award-winning sports writer and knows no word too big.
Pronunciation man.
Exactly. He's the pronunciation man. I can't even say pronunciation. But I do want to get into this Pat Mahomes contract. I think one of the big stories this week was the Pat Mahomes contract, and what a contract.
One of the big numbers this week.
Yeah, right. Like 10 years, $500 million. Awesome for Pat Mahomes. My favorite player in the NFL, bar none. I love watching this kid play football. I was psyched to see them get the Super Bowl championship last year. Well worth the money. Interesting tidbit, I thought, this week from Colin Cowherd, though. Let's play that.
How many Super Bowls will he win over the next 12 seasons?
I know I'm low on this. Fox Bet said 1.5. I'll take one. I think we forget how hard it is. Andy Reid, 62. Andy Reid does 4 more years and just says, like, I'm, you know, 65, 66, and I'm done. And they have one disappointing season, and the owners, you know, the pressure, it's hard.
Yeah, and interesting, I never agree with Colin Cowherd, but I'm with him, and I would even go below, I think, zero. I mean, I think when you look at the NFL landscape, and it doesn't mean anything to what I think the success rate or whether I think this contract is worth it for the Chiefs, because I think it's absolutely worth it for the Chiefs. And we'll talk about that later on. We got a hot or not with that one, I think. But I think at the end of the day, looking at a guy and saying, look, you have a better chance to win a championship with Pat Mahomes. There's no question about it. So you want to lock this kid in. But to say, you know, he's going to win multiple championships, I just don't think we're ever going to see that again. I don't think you're ever going to see what the Patriots did for the last 20 years again. I just don't think you're going to. And I don't think it has anything to do with Andy Reid. I know that everybody, you know, Andy Reid is a beloved coach, very good offensive mind. I get all that. But until this year, Andy Reid was the guy that couldn't win the big one. Yeah. He was the guy that you didn't want. There were jokes made about Andy Reid in the big game, not wanting him in the big game. So I don't think it has anything to do with Andy Reid per se. I just think it's going to be very difficult for the Chiefs to win another championship.
and the two or three championships across a span of between like 5 and 7 years, it's still very possible in the NFL, but it's really, really hard, and it's still very much once in a blue moon.
And I don't look at the Chiefs and think this is the next big thing.
No.
I mean, the only team that I've seen in the last like 10 years that I thought, okay, this team could be really good for a long time was the Seattle Seahawks. I thought when they won their championship in the Meadowlands, when they beat the Denver Broncos that year, whatever year that was, I thought this is a team that's going to be good for a long time. And there's reasons for that. They had an unbelievable offensive line. They had a young, dynamic running back. They had the dynamic quarterback in Russell Wilson.
Who was severely underpaid because he was a third-round pick.
Exactly. And you had a defense that was loaded with young stars. It just looked like this. And, you know, you had Pete Carroll that was the kind of coach that you think could lead a team into that. So,
and they've been good.
Like, they've been good.
They've been good. They got back to the Super Bowl the next year. To get to back-to-back Super Bowls is nothing
it's
to
hard,
sneeze
yeah, it's
at.
Hard. It's hard.
But and they've been good since. But, like, there's a difference between having your guy and being good and thinking you can get back there and being good and not getting back. That's a very, like, it's a very small margin.
Yeah, I will be honestly shocked. I mean, I don't want to say I'd be shocked if he won another championship, because I mean, he could win another championship. There's no question. But that Chiefs team, to me, doesn't look like a team that's built for multiple or even a championship next year. I think their window was last year. I think everything fell perfectly for them. They'll be competitive again next year because of Mahomes. And maybe I'm way off, but when I'm thinking off just top of my head about this, I mean, they got to be one of the favorites, but I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't win a Super Bowl. I don't look at this team and think, okay, the Chiefs are going to be this for a long time. I just don't look at that whole team in general like that.
Yeah, I think this is one of the few times I agree with Cowherd, but like that 1.5 Super Bowls line is like, that's a great line. Cause like, it's very easy to see a guy of that caliber, give him anything to work with and don't screw it up and maybe get a little lucky. And yeah, you're going to win one more. I think the bigger takeaway from this deal though, like that's really awesome for the Kansas City Chiefs fans to know that you've got this guy that's a generational sort of talent that like, it's almost like a unicorn with what he can do and how he does it. And to know you don't have to worry about losing him. Like you don't have to worry about watching him play for another team.
He's worth going to watch play. I mean, I don't care if the Chiefs were a 500 football team. I would pay to go watch Pat Mahomes play. He's that dynamic. So I don't think this contract was made because obviously they want to win championships, but I think it's more about the fact that they've got the greatest show on earth and they want to keep that for 10 years.
Well, yeah, he is both a butts in seats player and the kind of guy who can be the difference maker between whether or not you're a one and done team or a team that could be a dynasty. Like if there was, I don't know if they're going to be the next dynasty, but if they were, he's the difference maker.
Right. To have a dynasty, you got to have a guy that can steer the dynasty. You're not going to do it piecemeal because then that's not really like that. It's a dynasty, but it doesn't have all the same parts. Like to have a chance at the dynasty, you got to have the guy. They got the guy. Now they got to see if they can assemble the dynasty.
Yeah, the Chiefs are not the dynasty. That's not going to be the next dynasty. I'm just telling them. I'm just giving my opinion. That's what we do here. I mean, I don't look at this team and think that this is the next big thing in the NFL. I think he's the big thing in the NFL. He's the guy. He's the Ken Griffey Jr. when Ken Griffey Jr. was
great
in his
comparison.
Prime.
Yeah.
You know, that's who he is. But, you know, and again, you put some pieces around him, you know, you never know. And he's got the ability to win football games for you with just his ability. But I don't look at the Kansas City Chiefs and think this is the next big thing. I look at the NFL right now, and I think it's always wide open to me. Now that the Patriots are kind of, and again, who knows? I think Bill Belichick's going to keep them relevant. We've talked about this at nauseam about what I believe the Patriots are and where I think they can go.
I missed out on Cam Newton last week.
Oh, yeah. Well, you missed a lot of Cam Newton because we did the show Friday and Saturday last week, buddy. We did a lot of Cam Newton. But, you know, I think the Cam Newton, we'll talk about that with him, but with you as well. But the Cam Newton piece, I think the Patriots are going to be fine. I think until I see the Patriots stink, I'm just not going to believe it. But when I look at the NFL in general, I don't look at one team and say it's everyone trying to beat this team. I think it's always a crapshoot. And that's why when we argued, when I argued that the Giants can win the NFC East, and then Brady, when he was on the show with us that week when you were out, telling me, well, look at their schedule. How are they going to beat this team? How the hell do I know? Because most of these teams aren't great the next year. Maybe San Francisco stinks this year. You know, you just never know. It's so hard for these teams to continue their greatness. I don't look at Kansas City and think, ooh, this is going to be a team they're going to have to watch out for the next 5, 6, 7 years.
Right.
I don't see that.
And that, like, that's the thing with these trying to make Super Bowl predictions. Pat Mahomes gets hurt this year, next year, 3 years. Like, he might not be the same player.
Very
like,
true.
I'm not wishing that upon him.
Of course
but, like,
not.
That's why you really can't forecast with any precision in the NFL. Because if you have your centerpiece guy and he gets hurt, where do you go?
Yeah, very true. Very true. And I think when you think about these things, you don't think in those terms of if he gets hurt. I know, regardless of whether you get, and I hope, God, I really hope he never gets hurt, because he is, to me, he is a reason that I'll put on another team's football game. Usually, I don't know how you guys feel. Maybe you, I know Aaron loves his football, but to me, I watch the Giants, and then if the game doesn't, if it doesn't pertain to the Giants' success of a win or loss, I'm not watching.
Right.
Pat Mahomes, I'm going to put on a watch because I love watching him play. But regardless of whether he stays healthy or not, to me, I don't look at the Chiefs and say, okay, this is a team to beat for the next 2 or 3 years. Yeah, I think they're going to be great next year. There's no question. But I think they're beatable.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be interesting to see. Aaron, did you want to add something that I saw you had your, did you have your hand up or you?
I was going to say he's that kind of guy for me too. Like Indianapolis versus the Chiefs, which ended up being a really good game. That's the reason I turned it on, was I was like, I want to know what if like that's going to be a good game, because I think it was Monday Night Football. So like it's supposed to be a good game. And Indianapolis looked pretty good at that point in time, and they ended up playing them really well. But that's why I turned it on, was Patrick Mahomes.
I'm a little protective of Patrick Mahomes as a fantasy owner.
Oh, I bet.
I got him ground floor 2 years ago, led me to a championship. Yeah. I'd think I have an eye for talent there, too.
So. Well, listen, come on. We got nice glasses, so that usually helps you.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, let's get to the Green City Garage poll question. Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave, number 5, South Burlington, Vermont, 05403. Just in case you're wondering what the zip code is, because you don't need to give all the information. Phone number 802-651-9299. Go see my buddy Chris Wallace at the Green City Garage. I'm just telling you, if you have a car issue, anything, you need to get your oil changed, tires, you know, rotated, you have questions about your car, the engine isn't running quite right, the windows are having trouble, whatever the issue is with your car, no problem is too big and no question is too small. And trust me, you're talking to a guy that has a hard time with a lot of things in his car. I mean, we've talked about this numerous times. I mean, there have been times I couldn't figure the heat out. You know, maybe how do I get the AC to work? You know, even questions like that, Chris is there for you. Check him out, Green City Garage, 802-651-9299. Tell him that Sports Saturday sent you. The question today is, we're going to go to break and come back and talk about this, because you know how much I love my New York Yankees. The question today is, this was kind of a topic this week, as Andrew McCutchen came out this week and was kind of criticizing the Yankees when he played for them for half, after a couple of years ago, after at a trade deadline, yeah, the Yankees got Andrew McCutchen. The Yankees had the hair policy and the no beard policy. Should the New York Yankees change their long hair and beard policy? Yes or no? Go to 101.3 The Game at Twitter right now and let us know. We break this down when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
The soothing voice of Austin Danforth telling you to go get yourself a new mortgage up.
Dulcet
mortgage
tones,
company.
Yeah.
I love that.
New mortgage up.
You nailed the timing on the out, too. That little run.
Hey, what can I say? I'm back. I'm hot.
You guys got you just smooth. That's just how it works. You got the
And it did just get hot in here, too.
It did. Well, it's because this room's got, you know, it's like menopause room. One minute it's hot, 1 minute it's cold. You know, it's crazy. All right, listen, this week the Yankees took a little bit of criticism, and of course, you know, because nobody, gotta have criticism, gotta have it. This is Sports Saturday. Good morning. I'm salty about this, as usual. 802-655-6672. No, I don't need a tissue. I'm not, I don't cry about this. I get salty. I get mad, angry,
Tears
frustrated.
Are salty. Tears
That's
are
true.
Salty.
That's a very good point. Anyway, if you want to talk about this with us today, 802-655-6672, or you can text us, like I said earlier, on the Town Fair Tire text line, same number, 802-655-6672. So Andrew McCutchen, very all-star center, all-star outfielder, superstar with Pittsburgh Pirates. I'm trying to remember if he got traded from the Pirates to somebody else, and then the Yankees traded for him at the trade deadline, I think the year the Red Sox won the World Series. They picked up. He's fast, great outfielder. Just one of the best players in baseball. I don't
Five
remember.
Tool guy.
Yeah. And I'm guessing. I think they got him from Pittsburgh. And if they didn't, I apologize. I can't remember what team he was on, but I know he's a superstar with Pittsburgh. Signed a huge contract the year after the Yankees with the Phillies. A huge contract. There were a lot of questions around that kind of money, but hey, man, you can get it. Good for you. But he came out this week and was kind of upset. And if you know Andrew McCutchen, he's got big hair and an awesome hair. And look, I told you, anybody who's got good hair is good hair to me because I have no hair. And he kind of came out this week and was talking about how he felt that the in so many words that the Yankees policy of no beards and short hair took away from who he was as a person and took away from some of his play. And that became a hot topic this week on sports radio and on sports media and sports social media. Even the huddle got into it. Let's hear the sound from the huddle.
So think, well, what's the big deal? Shave, be clean shaven. A lot of us have to go clean shaven to work. When you're in TV, like, can you imagine when Sharp Parker was doing the weather? You can't just have stubble and stuff like that. You got to be clean shaven or grow a beard or one way or the other. So you have to kind of adhere to some policy out there. But I agree with him. It is outdated. It's something that was a long time ago, 1973. Get with the times. And asking somebody to cut their hair. That was ridiculous. That is, I got a big problem with that also.
All right, Arnie doesn't like it either. And then even Buster Olney came on. He had some input on this as well.
I think so. And look, I've never had a conversation with Hal Steinbrenner about why they keep it going. It is definitely part of the regime. It's part of what's expected, but like a lot of things these days, I do think it's one of those things that should be under review.
All right, so we get it, and again, I guess I'm going to be the other side of this, and then I don't know where you guys will fall on this, and I'm sure it's the side of that, but you know, first of all, I think it's interesting that Buster used the word regime. You know, this isn't a regime. This is, you know, this is the Yankees. You know, this is, you know, the Steinbrenners have owned the Yankees forever. The Steinbrenners are an iconic family, and they've owned the Yankees. I don't understand the regime word. Maybe that's just me using semantics here. But when you use the word regime, I think it sounds a little bit like, you know, the regime is putting its hand down and making them shave your face and cut your hair. So I think the word regime is interesting. But
they do rule the Yankees.
Well, I understand that. But I mean, you know, there's words that you can use. But whatever. You want to use the word regime, that's fine. I thought that was an interesting take by Buster. But that's beside the point. Let me just say this. I don't understand why tradition, why it's got to be a bad thing. Like, and again, I'm not an old guy, okay? So I'm not like some, you know, crotchety old guy that sits in his recliner and, you know, is talking about the old days. I just don't understand why tradition, it doesn't matter anymore. And yeah, I mean, does it matter that they cut their hair, or does it matter that they make them shave their beards? No, it doesn't matter. And I bet you if you asked Hal Steinbrenner, does he care if they have facial hair or long hair, the owner of the Yankees now, he would say, no, I mean, truth is we don't care. It's just the Yankee way. It's just tradition that, you know, when you come to the Yankees, you're clean shaven and you're, you know, whatever the rule is, wherever your hair can be, you know, you can have a mustache, but it just can't be a goatee, whatever it is. I mean, it's tradition. And we take traditions, and of course we got to turn them into something bad. It's got to be something that's not allowing me to be who I am. Like, what would happen to Andrew McCutchen if he lost his hair? Like, if he started going bald, does that take away who Andrew McCutchen is as a player? Is it going to take away who Johnny Damon was as a player? Is it going to take away the guys that you look at that's got long beards? And I mean, what happens if you start going really gray and you don't want people to see that gray in your beard? Like, I understand if you have it, you want to do what you can with it, and I get it. Like, I have a beard. I like goatees. If I had hair, I told you, I'd look like Pauly D if I could. I'd want so much, I'd have so much hair. I'd put so much product in it. I just want to have some hair. But at the end of the day, this isn't a situation with the Yankees that I look at as they're saying, you do what we say, you know, this is, you know, hand and fist, and you better listen to what we're saying. It's more of a tradition piece. It's what, when the Steinbrenner family took over the New York Yankees, they were a laughingstock. I mean, that organization was floundering. This proud organization that had won so many championships in the 20s and the 30s and the 50s and the 60s, you know, for how many years? I mean, from 60-something until, you know, late 70s, the Yankees were an albatross. They were an embarrassment. And you have an owner that comes in, a brash owner, whether you like Steinbrenner or not. And I get it. He was polarizing. He did a lot of things that people didn't like. I get it. But he's one of the biggest names in the history of the game. He took this great organization and he turned the ship around and brought them back to what they are today. And they really are. I don't know how you can argue. They're the greatest sports franchise in the history of any sport. If you look at the longevity of what they've been and what they've represented. A little bit of tradition is still okay. And that's my point. I don't look at this as where you're affecting somebody's who they are as a person. It's just a tradition that you go by when you're a Yankee. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, Austin.
Oh, it always has struck me as lame.
Yes, that's the word I had in my head too.
Like, if we were talking about the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, when everybody had short hair and it was like you got to present yourself in a certain way. We're so beyond that now, though. Like, it just in the broader sphere. And I like traditions too, but this actually is a tradition that stifles like a degree of self-expression. And, you know, if it's by in it, the nature of self-expression is it shows who you are. You're expressing yourself.
Do you say the same thing about going to a big golf course and say you have to wear a collared shirt instead of a comfortable t-shirt because I want to wear a t-shirt that says this?
A dress code is a little different than a grooming code.
It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. Going into a, if I go play at Augusta National and I go with a pair of mesh shorts on that have my favorite team on them, but that's the way that I feel comfortable playing and I want to wear a t-shirt, what's the difference?
I think if Tiger Woods wants to wear a onesie to the
That's not true. That's not good.
I think he should be able to.
The golf course I caddied at in Manchester, Aquonic Country Club, basically the most private course in Vermont.
Beautiful course too.
Beautiful. Tradition like crazy. So a couple different stories from there along the same lines. Back when I was in college, we're talking 05, 06, when mock turtlenecks were a thing. I went to go play on one of the caddy days wearing a mock turtleneck, and they're like, "Austin, you can't go out there in that." And I've been there for a couple of years at this point, and like I know the ropes, and like the club does not consider
when mock turtlenecks were
they're
a big
making
deal.
A comeback. Tiger's
are
trying
they
to
really?
Do it. But like if Tiger showed up in a mock turtleneck, they would have said, "Mr. Woods, you need to get a collared shirt."
Right.
Second story, I got burned with a facial hair rule I didn't know ever existed. I'm a guy that's fond
at
of stubble.
Equinox?
At Equinox, yeah. I'm a guy that's fond of stubble. I shave every few days. I showed up for to caddy on Ladies Day, and the caddy master pulls me aside and says, "Austin, you can't go out today." And I'm like, "What happened? What did I do?" And you need to start shaving every day if you're going to come up here. I'm like, whoa! Since when was this? This has never been communicated before, but. They wanted to go that way, so right. I had to start doing that, right. And I resented right. it a little bit, and I will never forget that to this day.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. But the point is that you know, and that's their tradition. That's what that's their rules. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make them a bad person. It's just the rules of being there. And again, I'm just using that as an example of it's a Yankee tradition. It's like being a Yankee. Is you're going to be clean shaven, you're going to have short hair, whether you like it or not. I mean, I like to wear stubble too. I wouldn't be able to have this beard that I have now if I was a New York Yankee. I get that, but I don't see why we make a big deal of something that's just based on tradition and it's not affecting anything. Your haircut does not change who you are as a person. It just doesn't. Now maybe you've got I'm jealous of both of you. I don't know why both of you ever wear hats. Because if I look at, right now, look at Austin putting his hands through his hair. And Aaron, you've got the good hair because your hair grows up, which I like. I respect that.
Well,
but the point is that, and I'll let you make your point in a second here because I know you've got a good one. But it's tradition. It's just being a part of the Yankees. It's just part of the lore of the Yankees. And now we got to start changing that stuff and that's got to start being a problem. I don't understand.
Well, I see your what's wrong with tradition and I raise you what's wrong with changing a tradition if it's lame and serves no purpose.
It's lame in your opinion. It's not lame in the Yankees' opinion.
It's just tradition for the service of tradition.
Yes.
It doesn't actually serve a purpose.
There are lots of great traditions. One of my family traditions is we drink our coffee with eggnog in the weeks surrounding Christmas. That's a great tradition.
I've done that too. I like that.
But if all of a sudden I didn't enjoy eggnog anymore, I would consider moving on from the tradition.
And that's fine.
Feel that way about this rule.
But that not all the players feel that way about this rule. That's not true. So I would argue that the Yankees understand that this is being a part of the Yankees is being a part of this, is doing this. I don't think that there's anything wrong. And the same thing goes down, like we just talked about Augusta National. Like you just can't walk on Augusta and play golf in a t-shirt. Or pick any of the. I'm going to play in the Pierce in a few weeks with my father in Rutland. I can't just go play in that tournament with just a t-shirt on. I've got to have a collar on. That's just part of the rules. It's part of the tradition of the golf course. It's what you do when you're there. And I don't see what. I mean, you think it's lame for whatever. Fine, you think it's lame. That's fair enough. You can think. And even the players could think it's kind of ridiculous.
Thankfully, we don't have to worry about playing for the Yankees.
We don't have to. It's right. But at the end of the day, why is it a big. Yeah, you don't want to play for the Yankees?
No, I would kill to be a pro athlete.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I just don't think it's. I don't see why we're making this a big deal. I don't think. We keep destroying traditions. It's like. you know, today it's not, you know, this guy wants to have a beard, so we should just let him have a beard, you know, but it's, you know, we have a tradition here at the Yankees. We don't have beards. So why do we keep having to stop doing these things? I don't understand it.
I think perhaps, and like, correct me if I'm wrong,
sure,
but like McCutchen getting traded to that team.
Sure.
I don't know if he had approval of the trade or if that's a move the Pirates made, like, without any regard to his wishes for what he'd like to do with this person.
Sure.
Like, it is a little different if you get traded into a situation that all of a sudden you have to, like, you know, shave your head and... or
not shave your head, cut your hair.
But, like, for him, that's a lot of hair.
I don't think it had anything to do with his hair. Nothing to do with his hair. I think it had to do with his beard. He had to shave his beard.
That too.
Okay, but at the end of the day, you're being paid millions and millions in dollars. I mean, again, I go back to, you know, you talk about a problem. Like, go back to when these guys played baseball, like you and Yogi Berra. When you think of Yogi Berra, what do you guys think of? You think of, like, Hall of Famer, right? You think of, oh my God, it's Yogi Berra. When Yogi Berra got done with his seasons, he went and sold suit. Like, these guys had to go back to work. So it's not like these guys are, you know, they're so like, oh my God, how can you, the Yankees ask us to cut their hair? They're only paying him $1 zillion a year. He has millions and millions of dollars. You're completely taken care of. You know, you just for a couple of months of the year, you're playing baseball for the Yankees. Just shave your beard. That's really what it comes down to. They're not telling, you know, and don't have wherever the hair rule is. I don't know what the hair rule is, but yeah, I'm just saying, like, you can have Frazier had the outfield, if they call it, what's his first name? Frazier, the kid.
Clint
Frazier had a mohawk. That's fine. They don't care about that. They just don't want you to have long hair. It's tradition. And I guess at the end of the day, like, trying to break these traditions that just, you know, it's like the end. It's like we talked about Mike Golick leaving the air. Like, that's the end. You're never going to have that again. You know, and it's like at this point, it's like, you know, these are things that they've been in place for a long time. Does society change? Of course it does. But has society changed enough? I don't think it has anything to do with society. This was just being a Yankee and then getting, you know, and straightening the organization out. And it's more of the picture that they've painted in New York. It's like, this is the Yankee organization. We do things, you know, we're shaving and we're focused. And that's kind of what the mission they're trying to put out.
I get that. And it looked kind of the same with Patriot Way, where
right.
You go to Foxborough and you learn to start answering questions with monosyllable answers. One word answers, yes, no. You lower the tone of your voice.
Right.
Less animated, less forthcoming, all those things.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that tradition serves a very specific purpose, which is Bill not having to deal with what you said.
And it goes into strategy.
That's lame, though. Yeah. That's lame.
No, it's not.
It's lame. Well, it's not lame because you're Patriot fans.
And it ultimately affects their ability to do their job.
What about the kid that the young man that we had, the kid from Rome that used to work for Cleveland, now he works for the Miami Dolphins, and they said, look, you're not talking to the press. You can't talk to anybody. That's their rule. Is that lame? I mean, look, I mean, why can't he...
Facial hair doesn't affect, like, their ability to conduct their operations the same way someone being just out there and talking and talking and talking and then having to deal with
an assistant videographer that comes on a sports show in Burlington, Williston, Burlington, Vermont, and I say, what's it like working for the Dolphins is a big problem? No, it's just it's their rules. It's what you follow.
They don't want to give up state secrets.
Fair enough. The state secrets. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Celtics with our good friend from the Boston Herald, Mark Murphy. Don't go anywhere.
Phone lines are now open. Call 802-655-6672. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Good morning, it's Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. I'm your host, Jeff Paul, my man Austin Danforth to my right. Good morning.
Yo.
And our favorite guy, Aaron Wells, our producer. Good morning, Aaron, as well. I will say one thing about this whole, you know, this craziness that's been COVID and no sports. As the days have gone on, Austin, I feel like the powers that be and that cover the NBA, and when you think about the NBA, which hopefully will be starting very soon here,
mm-hmm.
There is a lot of love for the Boston Celtics. There are a lot of the quote-unquote experts out there that think the Celtics are going to be a team that's going to compete for a championship when this thing gets rocking and rolling. So I thought, who better to talk to than our Celtic insider, our good friend from the Boston Herald, Mark Murphy. Good morning, Mark. How you doing today, buddy?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Well, we appreciate you joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. So, Mark, when this thing gets going, and I'm a half-full guy, so I'm just saying, hey, we're playing basketball and we're looking forward to it. You know, nationally, the Celtics are getting a lot of love. You cover them. You're around them a lot. Is it warranted?
Sure. I think that, and I think just the nature of how this thing is starting up again favors a team that can get hot. I mean, they're a very good offensive team, so if they can get hot, it's going to work for them. I think you're going to have a healthy Kemba Walker, hopefully. They're moving him along slowly so far in the first couple of days of practice, but if they're healthy, I think they're a very dangerous team.
Is it the sort of thing where, like, as young and, you know, upcoming as the Celtics are currently constructed, at least some of their key pieces, is it one of those scenarios where just, like, being that much older and, like, maybe a little, like, even, you know, 4 months more prepared for a 22-year-old is a lot more than a guy that's 30, isn't it?
Yeah, because a guy who's 30, he is what he is. A guy who's 22, if you're talking about, say, Jason Tatum, I mean, he was in the midst of an incredible growth spurt when the shutdown happened. So he's one of the rising stars in the league. I could really see him having a great playoff. And they are a good defensive team. You know, they're a top five defensive team. So that's going to work. That's going to be very important early on.
Mark, you mentioned Jason Tatum, and again, nationally, I mean, there are people that think he's one of the best players in the league, going to be the face of the league one of these days. You agree with that as well? You're around him a lot.
I think I'm not going to say that he's a top 10 guy yet, but he's approaching that level. I mean, he's received the stamp of approval from LeBron James, calling him the young king. So, you know, I mean, what more do you need than that? I mean, Jason is a leader. He's at least the best young player they've had since Paul Pierce, certainly the best scorer they've had since they brought Paul in. He's definitely headed for greatness if he's not already there.
So one of the things I think is interesting about the Celtic team, and again, you've been covering them for a long time as we're talking to Boston Herald Celtic insider Mark Murphy here on Sports Saturday, is, you know, Kyrie Irving last year was on this basketball team, and they just kind of were, I don't know, I don't want to use the word floundering, but they just weren't the team that we saw before Kyrie, when it seemed like it was Brad Stevens' team, who I think is the best coach in the league. Does this team have a different energy now that Kyrie is in Brooklyn?
Yeah, and one thing I should say right off the top, most of these guys really considered Kyrie a good teammate. They had no problem playing with him. But when he returned last season, it was automatically going to change up what made them so good in the 2018 playoffs when Tatum started to really come into his own. Well, the ball was going to get redirected. Tatum, I think last season hurt Tatum. He had to readjust. I think it hurt Jaylen Brown. He had to readjust. And it's just the nature of running an offense with Kyrie. He's a very ball-dominant guard, and it absolutely changes the way you play. And for this team and the things they do well, I think it just nobody's fault, but it hurt them. And coming back into this year, using the part that I couldn't have foreseen was them playing as well without Al Horford as they did. But Gordon Hayward has filled in much of the facilitator role that Horford had. And, you know, they're just a really smooth running offense when they have all their pieces on the floor. And having all their pieces on the floor is a big thing. Obviously, I think the number is 14. They've only had 14 games where their best five players have actually played the same game.
Wow, that's so. Of those, like their best five, who do you think was most instrumental before the break? And do you think anybody else might maybe take over that role as they get restarted here?
Well, I think the guy who was most instrumental before the break was Tatum. He's just become such a load to guard. The key is, and I think having a healthy Kemba Sorry, there's construction going on in the house behind
me. That's okay.
But having a healthy Kemba is going to be key, because when he finally came back from his knee injury, he played the last three games before the shutdown. He admittedly didn't play that well. Now that he has a much better feeling knee, that's the guy you want to get hot. I mean, that somebody has to take the pressure off Tatum. Teams, going back to that game against the Lakers on the road when Tatum played a brilliant game, but everybody started blitzing him from that point forward. I mean, you know, and they have to give him some relief. Jaylen Brown's going to be important. If Hayward can finally consistently hit that three, I think that's going to be very important to him.
Mark, talk a little bit about Brad Stevens and his style. I mean, I just feel like he's the prototypical coach. You know, there are coaches in the NBA that look like they just sit down and let their guys just get it done, but Brad Stevens looks like he's got a plan, which you don't see a whole lot in the NBA, at least when I watch it. There's a lot of up and down, but the Celtics look like they play with a purpose. Talk about Brad Stevens as a head coach.
Well, he's got a great set of principles, values. It starts with defense. He has built a very good defensive team. Marcus Smart obviously sets the tone for that. Daniel Tice is the perfect Stevens player. I mean, he's a very good role player. I mean, you know, it's a team as a unit. I mean, you know, you wouldn't call Houston a Brad Stevens team, for example. But this is a group that plays as a unit. Kemba has been really on board as far as just sharing the ball and being very happy when other guys carry the load, because he did it for so long in Charlotte. You know, he needs some help, and he's got that help in this team. You know, it's a motion offense. It's about sharing the ball. It's about making the right play, taking the right shot, and this team does it very well. They didn't do that last year.
Well, do you feel like Brad Stevens has a lot to do with the fact that Jason Tatum has emerged as one of the players in the NBA?
I think probably Jason was going to get there anyway. These guys knew what they had way back in the draft. That famous workout out in L.A. where he showed up and hit 90% of his threes. This guy was going to be special. But certainly Stevens' system really helps Jason. And the thing that hasn't been noticed as much about Tatum this year is that he's become a much better defensive player. He's really bought in on that end. And when you have him, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart on the floor, and Tice is a very good defender too. I mean, that's a great core for a defensive team.
Mark Murphy of the Boston Herald, thanks so much for the time, my man, and have a great rest of your weekend, okay?
Take care.
All right. Interesting take. I mean, I truly believe Austin when you look at the Celtics and what they're doing. I think Brad Stevens has a lot to do with their success. I just do. I think Jason Tatum being the player that he is today has a lot to do with Brad Stevens. Yes, we know he's talented. Yes, we knew he was going to be a great player. But let's be honest here. And I don't know if you were even paying attention to it long enough when you were, you know, when it happened. But when Jason Tatum, when they drafted Jason Tatum, I didn't think, oh my God, they got the next best thing right here. I thought, okay, he's a good player, young kid, coming out of Duke, was undisciplined at Duke. I mean, I don't care what anybody says about the Duke Blue Devils. Krzyzewski does not train discipline anymore. These kids come out and they're not ready. I don't think Tatum was. Hang on, Aaron, you got to turn the thing off for us, buddy. I didn't think Tatum looked like he was NBA ready when he came out. But I feel like a coach like Brad Stevens, a guy that gives these guys, to me they're organized. You know, they're fun to watch play basketball. He's a little bit like Bill Belichick in terms of he can take guys that you look at and you don't really know who they are initially and turn them into superstars.
And you think, like, I looked at the last couple of years with Kyrie, and you have this nucleus that they had that was young and learning, mature and growing. And Kyrie Irving kind of, to me, was like, you know, the governor or the restrictor plate on a race car where, like, you knew the race car could go really fast.
Yeah.
but you really didn't know quite what it could do because he, like, for all his talents, was a limiting factor for those pieces like Tatum around him,
yeah,
who were, you know, in the process of blossoming. And without him, okay, like, as Mark said, you know, a guy that didn't, like, go from him to Kemba, where he doesn't quite have to dominate the ball as much to leave an imprint on the game, all of a sudden, like, you have all these different options and mutations you can take to be successful, and that's really cool to see.
It is, and when you think of a guy like Kyrie, who's arguably, when healthy, one of the best players in the league. I mean, would we argue that? Kyrie Irving is one of the superstars, yeah, in the NBA. But when you look at that and you think, wow, the Celtics are better off without him, that just tells you everything you need to know about the NBA to me. Because the NBA really, there's a hand, I can't think of any other coach besides Brad Stevens, and again, I'm top of my head here, that I watch and I think, boy, this team's got an idea what they're doing. Like, this is a system. Where you watch a lot of NBA games, it's up and down. They're athletic, they're fun to watch, they're throwing in bombs from 50 feet out, they're dunking like crazy, they're making shots, I get it. But when you watch the Celtics, there's a system there. And I think that's why I have a love affair with college basketball than I do the NBA. The Celtics are a team that you can root for. And the way this NBA season's going to go, this playoff's going to go, they got a real shot at winning a championship.
Yeah, and you can't always say that for a guy has a college-style system, yeah, comes from college, goes to the NBA. That success usually doesn't always follow.
Because players don't want to be coached like that.
But he seemed to have threaded that needle, yeah, and it seems to work.
Yeah, he's the best. I mean, the Celtics are lucky to have him. All right, quick break. When we come back, it's Out in Left Field time. These are always a lot of fun. Don't miss it.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right, Aaron, what do we got today, my man?
Father and son find a World War II bomb while magnet fishing.
Oh, boy.
Ben Austin said he and his son, Finley, were magnet fishing in the River Mole from a bridge in Dorking, England, when their magnet attached to a metal object in the water. As soon as I pulled it up, I was like, what is that? If you said to me what a World War II bomb looks like, I would think a massive car tire. It looks like it looked a miniature size.
Now, can I say something? I mean, bombs are heavy. Now, how strong is this guy, and how strong is this guy's magnet? And how strong is this guy's? Is that the end of a fishing pole or something? Is that how this works? Or is this like a crane type thing we're dealing with here?
I would think, like, you know, the metal detector magnet, like, that's the same thing. Right,
right, but if you're doing that and the magnet is pulling out the bomb.
Oh, yeah, it must be like what they use to move cars. Yeah.
Really? So you're bringing this thing to move cars into some river and you're just dropping it in there and pulling out bombs?
Who knows? I don't know. I'm not.
Yeah, that or this
guy. I'm not much of a fisherman.
Or this guy is very strong.
Apparently, the bomb was still pretty dangerous because they actually lost the $25 magnet they were using for fishing.
So a $25 magnet is strong enough to pick up a World War II bomb?
I guess it was a baby bomb.
He said it was a little wee bomb.
He said he was surprised at how small the bomb was, but a bomb disposal unit had to come blow it up.
Wow.
That's interesting.
That is interesting.
I like, maybe the word bomb is used loosely here. Like, not all ordnances are bombs.
Right.
Sort of thing. Like, so, like, it could have been like a explosive shell. I don't know.
Sure.
Like,
interesting.
Apparently, this comes after earlier in July, a pair of boys in Finland found a live rusty hand grenade.
Hey, yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's good, there's some
clean
crazy
family fun there.
That is, there's some good stuff in those lakes and rivers, I'll tell you. I have watched, you ever YouTube those guys, these guys at Magnet, and they find like old safes, or they find all these. One I watched the other day, this is funny, and I'm not making this up, this is true. The other day I was watching one, and they found a safe. And they pulled the safe up, and they found like $15,000 in it, and they found a this ancient dagger that was like worth like $10,000. I mean, just crazy stuff.
Sick.
And I think the guy that threw it in there was like a murderer or something. There's a story behind it, but they found it. This is years and years ago, but they found, they cracked it open, and they found all this crazy stuff inside it. That just makes you want to start, you know, using your metal detector. It's like watching that show Storage Wars. You know, all of a sudden you want to start going to those auctions and buying storage units because you can find those little gems.
Right.
You got to hold yourself back from doing that, though. Because once in a while you'll pull up a grenade and you don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah. Not all treasure is created equal.
No. There's no question about that. But if you're looking for something to do, and it's kind of boring right now, if it's a rainy day, like you're YouTubing, like YouTube that. Watch these guys go into these rivers and pull these crazy stuff out. I can't imagine what's in Lake Champlain.
I bet there's some fun stuff.
I know there's a pair of my wife's $100 sunglasses in the middle of it. I can tell you that.
I believe there are a couple of shipwrecks that scuba tours take people
to.
Yeah,
that's true. I actually got to scuba dive through a shipwreck in the Bahamas a couple years ago. That was insane. We were snorkeling. I mean, I obviously didn't go in it, but you could hold your breath and go down. And I mean, old like pirate ship or whatever it is. Like it was crazy.
How deep was the water?
Deep, but the shipwreck wasn't. I mean, I couldn't get all the way to it, but you could see it. You could get down enough to see it, but it wasn't terribly.
Like
deep.
I'm thinking like. When you go out on the Essex to Charlotte ferry, and that's the deepest part of the lake, and it's like, the lake goes like 400 feet beneath you.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, you're not just sifting through wreckage down there.
You don't recognize how massive our lake is. When I worked for the YMCA years ago, I used to kayak for the lake swim, which would go from Camp Abenaki up in the islands to New York and back. And one year I was the, so basically as a kayaker, you're like the point person for the swimmer. They look at you when you're, you know, and you get them where they're going. And at one point, the guy that I was kayaking for was in third place. So we were way behind the leaders, but we were way ahead of everybody else. And at one point I'm in the middle of the lake. Like there's no land. And I don't see any land anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's not that long a distance, but you realize how massive and how dangerous the lake is. You do have to take it seriously. In the summertime when you're out, it's a major body of water.
Oh yeah. Like that's any body of water. It's like, ooh.
But you look at Lake Champlain Albert going fishing or you're boating or whatever, you don't think about it, but it is a dangerous place to be if you're not being safe.
Exactly.
There's no question about it. All right, that's a good one, Aaron. Good one. Time for your sports update, buddy.
Getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
You know, Aaron, I have to ask you. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, I gave you a few hits that I kind of like, some music that I like. I said, hey, man, how about we incorporate some of these into some of our returns? You know what? I haven't seen one of them, but I can tell you something. I saw Austin Danforth, my boy to my right, hand you a couple songs, and like hours later, they're rotated into the show. Just wondering what's going on with you.
There was a change in my job responsibilities, constantly have audio playing from.
Always an excuse. You don't make any time for me.
It will happen.
I see how it is. I understand now. I get it.
Foo Fighters was pretty good this morning.
Foo Fighters was great. And we had the Foo Fighters because when we were doing the huddle together, I'm like, Aaron, get that on our thing.
Yep.
But how about getting some of the, I gave you some hits, man. I gave you some things that are trending.
They will get into the problem is since they're not already in the system, I have to record them.
Got it.
I can't do that from where I work.
Understood. Well, we need to make some adjustments on your work schedule so we can take care of Sports Saturday here. 802-655-6672 is the number to call to join us today. 802-655-6672. Or you can text us in the Town Fair Tire text line at the exact same number. And our text line has been lighting up a little bit here.
What do we got?
Well, we got a lot of people that are interested in the Yankee chat we've been having, Yankee beard policy. We got people for, people against it. But we are waiting for the Vermont amateur champion, Garen Poirier, who's about to call us pretty soon, to talk about his scintillating win. You know, if you haven't played golf before and you're not a big-time golfer, I'll tell you what, it is, to me, it is the most mental game out of any game you can play. There is not a game you can play that you have to have mental fortitude in like this game. You can be playing, you can get on a golf course and you can be on a driving range for an hour and hit every ball perfectly and then step up on a first tee and act like you've never played before. You can play 9 holes of golf at a level, you could play 200 or 300 par and feel like you found it and then all of a sudden get on the next hole and feel like you just lose it. So, I mean, it is a mentally challenging game.
In the same vein, another story from this week at the amateur. Max Major, another Rutland guy, took a year to try and be a pro, didn't pan out. So he just got his amateur status back this year, but very good player. He was runner-up two years ago at Country Club of Vermont. He goes out on Wednesday for the second round, said he hit 50 balls before he teed off, never hit the ball better in his life. Goes out, blasts his tee shot right on the first hole, makes a 9.
Been there.
Ends up shooting 77. Shot himself out of the tournament, sadly, on that day. And he had a hard night sort of thinking about what was going on and what he was doing. Comes back on the third round, Thursday morning. Goes out, shoots a 60. A 6-0. Sets the course record by 2. It has to be a Vermont amateur scoring record. 12 under par in 18 holes.
Gets himself back in it.
He made it interesting, got himself in the mix. Yep. But you want to talk about, like, you can do everything right and then do 2 things wrong, and you don't know really why it happened or what happened. and that's the game. That like, and you're constantly fighting that, trying to get yourself in position and just do the best you can.
Well, joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, joining us now on Sports Saturday, is the champion, the 2020 Vermont Amateur Champion, Garen Poirier. Good morning, Garen. Thanks for fitting us in today, buddy.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good. Hey, Garen, Jeff Paul here, the host, and I know you know Austin very well, and he followed you around like a stalker for the last week, so I'm sure you're very close with him. But, Garen, I got to tell you, I'm intrigued to talk to you because following Austin's stories this week, you had an unbelievable week, and I do want to go through what your mindset is, okay? So at some points in the last day, you had a 10-shot lead. And I can imagine the mindset of a player, and I golf, and I'm actually going to be at the Pierce tournament in a couple of weeks with my dad, so I'll be down in the Rutland area pretty soon, where you're a member at Rutland.
Excellent, but
you know, the mindset of, okay, I've got a 10-stroke lead here. Now I just got to get it done. And a lot of things happen, and it comes down to a putt on the 18. Talk about what your mindset was with a 10-stroke lead on, you know, going when you're in the last day of a tournament.
You know, it's funny because I don't do much scoreboard watching, so I wasn't really that involved in what the numbers were. I mean, I knew where Corey was because he was playing with me, and I knew where I was. And I kind of had an idea of where the people were, but I wasn't looking at my phone. I didn't know what the scores were. So to be honest with you, in the third round coming when it got to 10 is when I looked at it. You know, later, you know, obviously yesterday when I was taking a look and see what went on.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what was going on. I think my main goal was just to build the lead as much as I could and try to make as many birdies as I could because the golf course itself is gettable and definitely people can take it low out there. So I just wanted to make sure that I had as much of a lead as I could because, you know, holding on to a big lead is even probably harder than coming from behind.
So
that was my mindset as far as, you know, keeping things just going as deep as I could go.
So the thought process wasn't to look at the board and just be you. And was it a struggle to do that, though? As disciplined as you want to say we all are, I can't imagine, like, you've been so close to winning this so many times. It was right there in front of you. It's got to be hard not to be looking as the holes tick by.
You know, I talked to my caddy, Tim, on the after we played the ninth hole, and I asked him what we were at. You know, he told me where we were, And I didn't need to know where anybody else was, but I think my goal for the week was just to focus on myself. You know, I've over the years have definitely gotten a little bit caught up in where everybody's at or what everybody's doing, or, you know, I hope he doesn't go too low or blah, 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 blah. So I think my mindset this week was actually, I was in a great mental state, and I just decided to just focus on myself and try to make as many birdies as you can because, like I said, it was one of those golf courses where anything could happen. You know, obviously Max shoots 12 under in one round. So, you know, some guys can go crazy out there and go low.
So putting aside the fact that your game itself was in great shape this week and you'd been doing things to get your game in even better shape, what would you say the biggest difference was this week versus, you know, past amateurs when you've been in the mix or been in the hunt and didn't get the trophy at the end of the week?
You know, I think the main thing was, like I said, is just my mental state as far as, you know, paying attention more to what I was doing and less of what everybody else was doing. And I think that was my mantra this week. Obviously been in contention before. Dorset, I was close. You know, obviously Quinny I think it was 09 and 12 at Green Mountain National with obviously being in the final group. But, you know, I it was just a different mindset for me. I just, you know, focused on myself, making sure that I was, you know, hitting the shots, staying, you know, trying to stay in the present, and I know a cliche that is, but that was the most important part for me, and I think the difference was just a little bit more maturity, a little bit more, had put myself in positions in certain tournaments over the last couple of years of feeling that pressure and knowing what it feels like and knowing that, you know, you can finish it off, you know, mid-ams, and I've won some playoffs against, you know, Brian Smith and things like that in the mid-ams, so, you know, been in New England contention last year and the New Englands and stuff like that. So it just was, you know, I think the more reps you get, the more comfortable you feel. And I think it works out in the end. So obviously same thing as practice makes perfect and that kind of stuff.
When you talk to folks that don't really know golf or don't know, you know, high level golf, like you play when they ask, what's it like, how do you explain the sensation of playing in a tournament, competing, you know, just, you know, trying to do what you do as a golfer?
Sure. You know, I know how it feels to me, even being in the game for, you know, almost 30 years now of competing. You know, I'm almost 40 years old and I've been, you know, playing since I was about 10 or 11. competitively. So I know the feeling it feels like to me, and I can't imagine the feeling that would feel like to somebody that was first time in a situation like that. It almost takes your breath away. It almost, you can't even breathe. You can't even use your hands. It's this feeling of, just like complete loss. So I think, like I said, the more times you put yourself in those positions, the better you feel over time. And, some guys just are born with that kind of thing where they can just handle themselves. People say that, guys like Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, that their heart rate drops in those situations. Well, I would say 95% of the people in the world, their heart rate goes up. So, it's just one of those things where you just have to do it over and over again. And a person like me, I never was born with that kind of calmness. So, working on your mental game, really concentrating on your, getting yourself prepared, as far as your swing thoughts and things like that to get yourself in that position. And even when I was there on 13-14 on Thursday afternoon, I was feeling the heat. Even with a 4 and 5 shot lead, there's no getting away from it. And I think the feeling is suffocating. So, you just have to, like I said, prepare yourself, make sure you're working on your game, you're working on your special things, and just focusing on what you need to focus on.
We are talking to Vermont Amateur Champion, 2020 Vermont Amateur Champion. Like, just this has happened like 24 hours ago. Garen Poirier here on a Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. All right, Garen, I have to ask, I am a golfer and Austin's a golfer, so we can understand the thought process on 18. But, I think when you're a kid, whatever sports you love, if you're a baseball fan, you dream of being up in the bottom of the ninth with, hitting the home run to win the game. If you're a football player, you being the quarterback and making the pass. If you're a basketball player, hitting the shot. But you literally were living a childhood dream as you realize that Corey Joseffiak just rolled in a 25-footer for Eagle, and now you've got to make a putt to win the tournament. I mean, talk about what was going through your mind at that point.
I knew Corey was going to come strong at the end. There was a couple of easy holes coming in. So, obviously 16, 17, and 18 are pretty easy holes. You're hitting driver wedges.
Just for the record, all three of those holes, I usually play like 3 over, 4 over par a hole. So let's not, that's an easy on the easy thing, okay?
Easy and relative.
I'm just playing.
I knew he was going to make a one or two coming in, and I knew that was going to cut the lead down. And I just was trying to make sure that I wasn't putting myself in a bad position, but I knew he was going to make that putt on 18. Corey's a gamer. The pressure was on me. So, I had to hit it to the front of the green. I had a pretty simple two putt. It was up a hill, right to left breaker. It was a pretty simple putt that I like to hit. So when I hit it to about 3.5 feet, I wasn't really worried too much. But the mindset that I went through was, thinking of a putt that I've hit before many, many times in a pressure situation, saying, you've done this a million times. Just step up there. You've been putting amazing all week. Just step up there and be free flowing and make a stroke. And, obviously the nerves were there but you just got to kind of pinpoint your focus on one thing and try to, many things were going through my head as far as, Dave Van Enstein and him looking down on us and this whole thing with him and the trophy and him being proud of me, hopefully, and Sherry, his wife. And, I'm a people person. I'm a pleaser. I want to make sure, that was the whole process behind that. And then once I got in the pre-shot routine of going through the whole process, I said, all right, let's focus on a putt you made that you remember that was important, and let's just focus on that. And it worked out, and thank God, and it was a big giant monkey off my back.
So, yeah, we spoke, obviously, after you played on Thursday and got the job done. Thinking back since then, has anything changed about what it means to you how have you reflected on, just what you did the last week?
It's funny, a thing my father told me way, way back in the day. My dad was a pretty good golfer and taught me everything I know pretty much. And he was always saying to me, when it comes down to it, in the end of the day, if you win, there's usually nobody there. It doesn't, nobody cares. No players care. Obviously people care. They're proud of you. They want you to do well. But at the end of the day, 2 days later, you're back to normal. And obviously being a mid-am and having a job I'm driving to a wedding right now in Connecticut. So, it's just, you go back into the grind. And obviously, it's nice with social media these days and, the accountability and people telling you congratulations and we're proud of you and da-da. It was really, really nice over the last 2 days. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent on my phone the last 24 hours just answering, text messages and it feels good and it's great. But all in all, it's just a game it is what it is. So, but yes, very proud of myself, for competing the way I did. And it just feels great to finally get that, because I think the further along in your 40s you go, it was probably going to get a little more difficult because the kids are just so good these days. And you know, it's just tough. Golf is, I mean, in general, if you don't capitalize on your chances, you don't get many. So,
Garen, thank you so much for the time, man. And thanks for winning for us old guys. That was it was nice of you to do that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. One more for the old guys. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. You guys have a great rest of your day.
Congrats, Garen. We appreciate your time. Have a safe trip to Connecticut. Yep. All right. Garen Poirier, Vermont amateur champion. You spent the week with him 68, 64, 69, and winning with a 72. And, you know, I don't care what anybody says. As a child, if you love a sport, you're in your backyard, you dream of those moments that you have to make the putt to win. I mean, you have to make this or it doesn't happen. And Garen had the 40. I don't care if it's a 3.5-footer, if it's a 25-footer. It says a lot about Corey Joseffiak to knock in a 25-foot eagle putt where he drives the 18. Talk about the pressure that this kid, Garen's feeling at that moment.
Yeah.
And he obviously has the right mindset for it, because it's a guy that had a 10-stroke lead during the day. It gets whittled down. The guy you're playing against goes birdie eagle, and you've got to make a 3.5-foot putt, or you basically have squandered a 10-stroke lead. You've got to have some stones to make that putt.
Yeah, and it's one of those peculiarities about.
Whoa, that's a deep word.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there again. But it's one of those things about golf that, you know, Garen had been there, like, and he can draw on that experience, and you know the feeling when it does feel like the moment is just crushing your chest. You can't feel your hands. Your legs feel weird. He knows that, but like the peculiar thing about golf is that the way you have to train yourself to not think about anything else, and the way like monkey off your back is literally kind of what it feels like, where you like you're thinking about the like you can so easily switch from the moment to thinking about the misses and thinking about, oh, I got to do that, or just
the fact that I have to make this putt. It's just human nature to go in your head and say, I had a 10-stroke lead. I got him. Oh my God, he's about, you know, he's playing so well. Your mind is focused away.
There's so many dark places you can go.
It does, and he didn't go there. I mean, I think the best line of that whole interview was, I went to a place that remembered a putt that I made just like this in a personal situation. That's where I went, and it worked out. That is such a great lesson for anyone listening that plays sports. Is that slow it down, go to your happy place, a place that you remember that you went to when you did it before. That is a great lesson for any athlete, whether he's a golfer, soccer player, football player, basketball player. You know, no situation's too big. And I thought Garen Poirier blowing a 10-stroke lead and having to make a putt to win that tournament says a lot about who he is as a player.
Yeah, and that's also the nature of the tournament, where you can get up, and if you give a couple back and they get a couple back, all of a sudden that tension that was nowhere near you is all over you. And that's like the game is about defeating the tension as much as, you know, the guys that are coming after you.
Well, congratulations to Garen Poirier and Austin. Great job covering him this week, man. I'm telling you, like, from a person that just loves sports and loves to follow sports, Austin, you're a great follow on Twitter. Obviously, reading your articles in the Free Press, but great job and congrats to Garen.
Thanks,
all right,
buddy.
Take a quick break. When we come back, former producer here at 101.3 The Game, but now an ESPN radio producer down in Bristol, Ryan Matlack joins us to talk about his time in Vermont and what's going on with Mike Golic and ESPN. No Moss next month? We'll talk about that next.
The high school coach and the high school reporter who comments on that coach. How do they do a show together? It's Sports Saturday with Jeff Paul and Austin Danforth on 101.3 The Game.
Oh, I've been waiting for this interview. Gonna be old home week for me. The former executive producer. I think that's a term we'd use around here. The former executive producer of 101.3 ESPN. What do we call it? ESPN 101.3 or 101.3 ESPN? Whatever.
101.3 ESPN.
101.3 ESPN. So before we were The Game, and before there was a Brady, we had a Ryan Matlack. And joining us now on the TikTok Droolers guest line is now an ESPN radio producer for the big station, for the mothership down in Bristol, our good friend and old boss, Ryan Matlack. Good morning, my man.
Oh boy, I don't know if boss is the right title.
I know, maybe a friend. Right? You know, you were my boss. You were my boss when I was doing this. Absolutely, I had to talk to you to do anything. So yeah, you were our boss.
Oh man, it's been too long. It's so great to hear your guys' voices and thanks so much for having me on the program.
And I hope that I'm not divulging too much information here, because I don't mean to do it, but I have to say it on the air. Your part of your phone number has 101.3 in it. Did you do that on purpose?
Oh, it was the stupidest thing ever, Jeff. A really good guy I worked with when I got a new cell phone plan. We talked about, a number, and, we got to talking, and I'm a big mouth, right? So obviously the station came up.
Sure.
And I mentioned, and he knew it, and so he starts to, hey, let's do this for your number. And it was a great idea in theory, but the problem was everybody, when I lived in Vermont, obviously, everybody who called it assumed they were calling, an office number. Like, hi, yeah. Yes, is Ryan there? it was always kind of the assumption that it wasn't even my cell phone. So looking back, potentially a mistake, but now it doesn't really matter, and everybody just, at ESPN assumes that I'm from Vermont originally because of the number.
Right.
So it's all good, which is not a bad thing. I'm completely okay with that.
Well, it's interesting. I've had your number in my phone for years. I just never knew the number, and then the day when I was giving it out to Aaron, I'm like, wait a minute, it's 1013.
Yeah. Did you think you were just going to dial the office up?
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, is this right? I mean, then I started thinking, oh my God, are we going to actually get a hold of him? But I said, well, I just texted him, so it must be right. Ryan, listen, before we get into what's going on with Mike Golic and ESPN, I do want to talk about your time here in Vermont. I mean, you were a part of this station when it was really growing. We were new. It was a new thing. Talk about what it was like to be in Vermont and doing what you did at this station.
Well, honestly, I miss it dearly. I have not been back as much as I should have been. But like my time in Vermont, I was always very, very focused on the station and just very happy to be involved with all the different things. Took a lot of my time. And, as Jeff, that's what radio does, and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of time and energy. So haven't been able to come back as much as I want to. But I'll tell you what, it's one of the greatest places on planet Earth, and I loved every second of being able to work with you guys, be able to just, my big thing in this thing I struggled with was, as anybody from, out of state, and I had a little background on UVM because my dad had gone there, but, the sports scene, obviously I was always learning, and people like you and others, people that were always able to kind of give me an idea of what sports meant or what the sports community was like in Burlington and Plattsburgh. In Plattsburgh, too, because a lot of times I was guilty of not always giving that great area the attention it deserved. Went over there for a few sporting events, changed my mind. So just extremely good way to, basically break into the industry and to meet some great people along the way. Really wish I was still up there days like this, because I'm sure it's beautiful in the Champlain Valley on a July Saturday.
Well, Ryan, it's Austin. I hate to break it to you. It's kind of, it was dumping rain this morning, gray, and yeah. So
the kiss of death.
It goes either way, but yeah, it's good to hear your voice, man. You're the guy that got me in front of a radio mic for the first time, which is kind of wild to think about.
Yeah, hey, have you won any awards since we last texted? I mean, this guy, Jeff.
No, you don't have to tell me.
Him up, my friend.
Well, he tells me every week, so I know about that.
That's erroneous on both counts.
I mean, I can't fit in my chair because there's all these trophies in front of me every time I come in here. I don't know what's going on.
You're barely in the studio.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
Exactly.
No, but
sorry,
that's okay. You got me in front of a microphone, which I think I wasn't thinking about it at the time, and here we are a few years later, and it feels pretty natural, and you made it feel pretty natural, which I think is a credit to what you do in your sphere and in your skill set. And what's the big for folks that are listening in and not probably as privy to the media landscape? What's the biggest difference from taking a guy like myself who'd never done it before to some of these pros that you get to work with every day at ESPN?
Well, first off, anybody like you with talent makes it work. I had very little to do with that. I needed a good local voice, and you were always exactly that and more. Honestly, the best part about being able to not only work in Vermont at an ESPN radio affiliate, I'd listen to a lot of these guys that now I'm working with, but being able to kind of take what I had learned and done with ESPN radio in Vermont and apply it to that area, to ESPN radio, to the network, and vice versa. When I came down here, I got a crash course in how to deal with a lot of different style of hosts, largely those maybe with a bigger ego, and that's part of this industry. I mean, anybody will admit that. Colin Cowherd will admit that. I mean, anybody would. It's a big part of it. And so just dealing with that kind of stuff and a lot of good people down here. A lot of people that will, a lot of hosts that will take you out to dinner. A lot of hosts that will look out for you. So it's really been nice being able to go up and down the ladder and see really the same quality of type of person.
So before we get into the Mike Golic stuff, and I want to make sure we have enough time to do that, talk about some of the guys that you really, I mean, talk. You said some of these guys take people out to dinner, they care about you. Talk about some of the personalities down there.
Freddie Coleman's one of the greatest people on the earth, and he and I knew each other a little bit, or rather, you know, we had corresponded, texted before I'd gotten down there, and when I work on the show a lot, have a good relationship with him. May have had a few too many Molsons once and called into the frenzy. He loved that, was able to break out the Canadian accent on him. I mean, just, is you know, you can be a sports fan and a buddy with him. So yep. I think that's part of the appeal and probably why people that haven't even met him love the late night show. So working with him has been a pleasure. And I know we'll get to Mike Golic Sr., but Mike Golic Jr. has been one of the better people to work with. He's around my age. So to kind of, you know, and he was doing the morning show before I was, when I was up in Vermont, I would, you know, hear him and Robin Lundberg do it. And to hear him then and to where he's come and see the amount of work that he's put in to be there, despite the fact that, we know the type of stuff that he'll get from people based off of who his dad is. But he's, you know, in my opinion, earned every minute of airtime, and he's been phenomenal to work with.
Well, I got a bone to pick with him about the way he handled the Daniel Jones draft. I'd love to talk to him about his reaction.
Hey, Jeff, come on, you got a bone to pick. We got a bone to pick with a lot of people who were.
You talk about
including myself to a degree, but
I like to be out on the record and say that I loved it. So I just want to say that. So only have a few minutes left, right? But I want to get the Mike Golic piece, and I'm not trying to get you in trouble at ESPN, but and I can play ignorant because I'm not following this every single minute, but I don't understand. It's almost as if they're just canceling him, and maybe the show's not working out. I get it, but Mike Golic is one of the pioneers of sports radio. I mean, he was. We were talking about when we were previewing the show when we came on, Austin and I, about, to me, when Mike and Mike was on the morning, that was like you get up in the morning, you eat breakfast, you put on television, you watch as much of that as you can before you have to go to work. I mean, he was an iconic figure, and now all of a sudden it comes out of nowhere and he's just gone. I mean, what's ESPN doing down there?
Yeah, it certainly hurts just to see a familiar voice. And this is, radio is really cruel in a lot of ways when it comes to the ending of shows and 10 years and long-standing relationships. It can happen abruptly. Here at ESPN Radio, we've actually done an interesting job of keeping hosts on for the opportunity to have farewells, even when they're going to other networks, which is rare. So that's an opportunity that I'm sure the hosts appreciate. It's just not going to be the same without him. There's no doubt about it. I've worked with him a little bit, and he's been phenomenal to work with. I can tell you he's a guy that would always pay for suites over at the local, baseball or AHL games for the guys to the people that worked on the show to show his appreciation. So just and the family, the whole family kind of makes ESPN Radio, feel like more of a family network because they have a podcast and all that. So, there's a lot of sadness, of course, but appreciation for everything that he's done. The one thing I'll say about it is, I don't think he has any intentions of retiring, and he's going to be an addition to any lineup around the country at any network.
Did it come out of nowhere though? Did this come like you came into work one day and all of a sudden he's not?
Anytime that a contract is allegedly ending. We had an idea that something might happen, but I had no idea that it was going to be this soon. I don't think anybody did. And, the lineup lineup they've announced will launch in a few weeks. And that will, that certainly was ahead of when I thought they would do it. But, you roll with the punches on that one.
Yeah.
Nothing but the best to Senior, because he's just been, like you said, a legend. And there's really no good way to see it all end, but I think he's handled it with tremendous grace. And if reports are true that he, in fact, would have reunited with his old host, I think that says a lot about how much he wanted to be a part of the network.
You mean he wanted to get back with Mike Greenberg? Is that what you're saying?
Reports, yep.
There were reports, so the issue is Greenberg. without getting you in trouble.
Not necessarily him.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. I was actually looking for Mike Greenberg comment on Twitter when this went down, and I still haven't seen one. So that's interesting.
And that's probably part of where a lot of speculation comes, that there might be some bitterness still there.
Yeah. So there was bitterness there.
Clearly not on the side of senior.
So I guess my next question before we let you go, and Ariane, I appreciate you taking the time this morning.
Yeah, of course.
Do you find that, you've been around this for a long time, do you find that these iconic shows, these personalities that sit together every single day, that after a while it just doesn't work? You know, you saw what happened at WFAN with Mike and the Mad yep. Dog, Chris Russo and Mike Francesa. Yep. You know, Mike and Mike, if broken up, I mean, do you see... This is kind of the norm that they kind of run their course. It's kind of like a marriage, and if you don't have that continuity, it just goes away.
Yeah, and especially in the case of a morning show, Jeff, because there's just so much pressure and stress and fatigue all wound up in one because of the time that you're getting up, the amount of pressure that is on a morning show to succeed. It is just such an instrumental part of the entire lineup. It keeps the lineup steady and going. So it is extremely important. And to do what they did for 20 years is like 100 years in human years. In radio, that is, nearly 20 years. But it really is incredible. And the fact that, you know, senior and with Rooney coming back to the lineup, they still have a thirst for it is really incredible. It can really wear on you. And one report you read about it, what someone else said or what have you. I mean, those are all things that can just spark something. I never really understood the whole situation. I got down here too late to get any idea of it, but that's not surprising at all that anything like that would happen in this industry.
I feel like Austin's probably starting to hate my guts. So I'm just, I'm very kind.
Come on.
You just never, I can't be. We've got too good a relationship for that.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. So I guess right before we go, though, I have to ask, you bring it up and, we'll use Mike and Mike as a perfect example every single morning. And I think how many hours a day was that show on? Was it 3-4 hours?
Three. Anyway, right? Three.
Right, yeah.
Mike and Mike was on 4 hours. Some affiliates did not carry it for that long.
So my question is like, how much work behind the scenes is done to get the prep for it every day, to get the 4 hours of content every day? I mean, how many producers are behind that helping them organize that? Or is it producers handing product to them and saying, here, this is what we're going at this today and let's go?
That's a good question. With the TV component, you have a huge staff. Obviously, the staffs are somewhat separated, but they do communicate, and they're part of a lot of show meetings. So it's a big family, and you got about five people on the radio side, and I honestly couldn't even tell you how many on the TV side. But the radio side, you have four or five, and everybody's getting up around 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock, and depending on overnight producers to give them some information about what happened. Hosts are rolling in around 5:15 a lot of times, maybe a little later. It really is something else. But for the most part, like, they do a pretty good job of making sure you're out there semi-early. There isn't as much post-show stuff because so much of your energy is on preview, making sure that the show is well-prepared. And then the booking of guests continues throughout the night. And we have a separate guest booker just for that. So, it's quite an operation for sure. Just a little bigger than what we had in radio. But I like to think that cast of thousands, we got it done.
I like to think that Sports Saturday had a little bit of growth on you to help you get ready for the big time down there.
Course it did. Absolutely. Launching a show? Absolutely. It was a pleasure, as always, to be on with you guys. I know you have to run, but this is... it's been fun talking radio. I hope I haven't bored people to tears.
No, Ryan, honestly, it was great talking to you again, and congrats to all your success. And we'll do this again down the road. I'll reach out again.
Of course. Hey, hockey's back, boys.
Your Toronto Maple Leafs. You're all excited. Good for you.
Yeah, we're going to get 4 extra games this year before they're knocked out. Let's do it.
Hey, man, you take those 4 now with the way the world is. I'm sure you're looking forward to them.
You said it right there, man. We all need it. We all need it big time. And to everybody in Champlain Valley, hang in there. Take care.
All right, Ryan, thanks, my buddy. ESPN Raider producer and former producer here at 101.3 The Game, Ryan Matlack. And I will say, we've been blessed. I mean, we had Ryan that was here for the... basically just the beginning of this and getting it rolling, and he handed it off to Brady, and Brady's taken it to next level. So we've been very lucky here, and it was great to talk to Ryan.
Yeah, I hadn't heard his voice in a while. It was good to have him on.
He's a good man and the biggest hockey fan I've ever met in my life. Seriously. I mean, the biggest hockey fan.
He's like, he following him on Twitter has me connected to like most of hockey Twitter, and it's great.
All right, take a quick break. When we come back, it's Hot or Not time. Don't go anywhere.
Extreme Granite in nearby Stanstead, Quebec can save you 50% or more on beautiful granite countertops. Here's what Sarah from Williston had to say.
When we bought our house, I loved everything but the kitchen. I knew right away the countertops were the first to go. So we had Extreme Granite install our new granite countertops, and they look amazing. They are located right over the border from Newport, Vermont. We even got to pick out our own granite slab, and we saved a ton.
Granite countertops increase the beauty and value of your home. Buy your granite direct from the manufacturer at Extreme Granite and save up to 50%. And with the strong U.S. dollar, you can save even more. Extreme Granite in Stanstead, Quebec has been family-owned since 1972, servicing Vermont, New York, New Hampshire, and Quebec. For a limited time, receive a new stainless kitchen sink with all new granite countertop installs. Some exclusions apply. Find them online at extremegranite.ca. That's X-T-R-E-M-E, granite.ca.
Hi, I'm the Sun, and I'd like to talk to you about our personal relationship. While it's true that I'm very distant and unapproachable, I really am here for you. Every day, I'm sending you seriously positive energy. And I'd like to introduce you to some people who could, you know, maybe bring us together. Catamount Solar is Vermont's only employee-owned solar company. And they're Vermont's most experienced solar team with hundreds of installations throughout the state. Catamount Solar will plan your installation with aesthetics in mind and handle every detail from permitting to utility coordination. And Catamount is part of the community. They even give 5% of all profits to Vermont charities. Seriously, that's the kind of illuminated company I can get behind. Hey, I give them two thumbs up, but, you know, I don't have hands.
Catamount Solar offers affordable systems with easy financing and the best warranty in the business. 15 years on workmanship. But to understand the true value of Catamount, visit catamountsolar.com to meet some employee owners in person.
Superb Cupcakes is a locally owned gourmet cupcakery who specializes in taste. Their cupcakes are created from scratch using only the finest ingredients. No box mix here. Making all of their cupcakes in single batches each day to make sure you get the freshest cupcakes possible. With over 90 flavors changing each day, you never know which one they'll be doing next. Like them on Facebook or stop in today to make it a superb day. Superb Cupcakes, located in Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston.
You better crank up that AC because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
All right, when Nelly starts the beat, Aaron starts reading. Go ahead, buddy.
This is Hot or Not, and this is brought to you by Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Superb Cupcakes is open for curbside pickup. Available flavors are posted on their Facebook and Instagram pages daily. Call them at 802-871-5941 and place your order for contact-free pickup.
And boys, can I just say I'm on their Facebook page right now, Superb Cupcakes. They have a new cupcake that they're featuring right now. Listen to this one. The cupcake of the day is Cookie Monster. Vanilla cupcake with cookie dough baked in the middle and topped with edible cookie dough on top. You can get one today at Superb Cupcakes in Williston. I'm just telling you, like now I'm salivating. I'm not going to be able to answer these questions. Way to go again, Superb Cupcakes. The Cookie Monster cupcake. Yes.
Oh, my.
I'm all in for that. I'm all in. Oh, and I like the little blue star on top. Reminds you of the Cookie Monster, you know, from Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good cupcake right there. That could be a problem.
As they said on the show 30 Rock, I want to go to there.
Yeah.
All right, so kicking off Hot or Not, Jim Harbaugh said this week that he doesn't think sports will spread COVID.
COVID is part of our society. Wasn't caused by football or caused by sports. You know, there's no expert view right now that I'm aware of, or that are agreeing expert views that sports is going to make that worse. It's part of our society. We're going to have to deal with it.
So we shouldn't worry about COVID being sports being spreading COVID, Hot or Not.
I don't know if he's saying it like that, black and white. Like sports isn't going to spread. I think what he's trying to say is that it's part of our society. Playing sports, it's going to be part of our lives. But I don't think you have to worry about it spreading to a point where we have a, you know, another like craziest word spreading epidemically. Now, I think if you put fans in the stands, you might have a different issue there because you're putting 50 or 60,000 people, maybe 100,000 people in some cases in a stadium. But in terms of just playing the sport, and that's the first I've heard of Jim Harbaugh. I don't know what else he said. But I think if they're just playing, I think, you know, what he's trying to say is like, we got to play, you know? And so I can see where he's coming from there.
Yeah. I have to go not on this. You may have heard me like cringe and like inhale as he was talking, because this is kind of the latest edition of Jim Harbaugh says just nutty things like that. What planet is he on right now? Like, he famously thinks him drinking milk every day made him 6'4" or 6'5", so he could be a quarterback. Like, the. I can see where he's coming from. Like, the sport itself doesn't do it. If there's no like guys that have it on the team, they're not going to it's not going to magically create more. But once you have guys in close contact, it will spread. We know that it will. Like, so the 100 guys on the football team, if one or two of them get it, the sport will spread. Like, the sport will spread it. But yeah, like, in a vacuum, of course. No, like, it won't do it. So yeah,
go ahead, Aaron. I'll let you make your point.
If the teams make the proper precautions and they don't have fans in the stands, it should not be a serious issue in terms of spread. But those are ifs. You know that these teams want people in the stands as soon as possible, and you know that you can only do so much in terms of precautions. Right. So it is a risk. It's just whether or not for those leagues and for those players, it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, I mean, it's a clip from a quote. So, you know, you're basing it on a small piece of information here. But, I mean, I think what he's saying is that, you know, starting sports again will not cause this, in his mind, will not cause this huge spread of, oh, my God, we're, you know, we have another huge problem here. I mean, I mean, it's such a tough debate because, you know, you don't want to sound insensitive because you're not, I mean, I'm not, you know, no one's, people that want to play and want to get life back aren't insensitive to what it does. I think what he's saying is that, you know, there's a reality here that it's a part of our society. We have to deal with it and that they should play. I think that's what he was saying.
Yeah. It hit with him. He thinks he's crazy like a fox. And I think he actually is just more crazy. And even as a Michigan guy, it's like, Jim, you don't always have to talk about stuff.
All right. Mike Mutnansky of WEEI said on his podcast, Mutt at Night, that Cam Newton is an upgrade from Tom Brady.
So I believe that Newton's going to be a top 5 to 10 quarterback in the NFL. And if you look at what you had here with Brady last year, Brady tailed off in the second half of the season. A lot of that had to do with the offensive line, the receivers, etc. But I believe what you're going to get with Cam Newton this season compared to Brady last year, it's going to be an upgrade.
Yeah, I mean, not. I mean, until I see that. I mean, you know, listen. I mean, I think Cam Newton's going to be great in New England. I think if he stays healthy, he's got a chance to be special. And I think Bill Belichick's the man, so he's going to make him special. But I think that's really going out on a limb to say that they're better off without Tom Brady. I mean, again, I go back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago, and you weren't on last week, but a couple weeks ago. There was a point in the season last year that we thought the Patriots would be undefeated.
Yeah.
I mean, there was real talk about them running the table and being undefeated. Tom Brady did not lose that. Tom Brady did not lose a step in his game. Tom Brady didn't have the weapons around him. Things fell apart for them. It happens. But to say that they're better today without Tom Brady is just, I think that's a reach. Maybe it'll be proven to be right, but today it's a reach.
I might go hot on this. I think what Cam Newton can bring to the table as a mobile quarterback who can move the ball with his legs, as well as, you know, a very adept, skilled passer. Like, I think his mobility adds a dynamic to that offense that they never had with Brady, and especially not last year. That can keep defenses that much more honest, where, as we saw last year, Brady didn't have the time to get the ball out to guys that couldn't get open as quickly. If you get that half second with Cam Newton and he can make those good decisions, there's a reason he was an MVP before and he got a team to a Super Bowl. Like, that's like, and I don't think we're not that far removed from that time. I think, yeah, given their ages and skill sets and what the Patriots need, I think it could be an upgrade.
There's an intangibility to Tom Brady that no one, we talk facts, we talk about stats, and, you know, you give me facts and there's nothing you're saying that's wrong. But Tom Brady is a winner. He finds a way, he gets it done. He's just one of those guys that come along once in a while. He is the guy. And to tell me today that Tom Brady's about to go to Tampa Bay and he's still playing, is better than Cam Newton coming in, that he has so much to prove. He's so injured that there, you know, I believe he's going to be great in New England, Cam Newton, to be all transparent. But to say that the Patriots are better off without Brady, I think is a stretch. I do.
I don't even know. I don't even know how I feel about it.
I know. I didn't see your hand come up, so I was like, maybe you don't have an opinion on this one. This is your wheelhouse.
Well, on the one hand, Tom Brady did not look as good last year as he did, but I would take Tom Brady at half capacity over pretty much any other quarterback on earth. On the other hand, Cam is hungry, and he's very, very talented, and he's a lot younger. So I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm on this one.
We're gonna find out.
I'm gonna go with not because of my love for Tom.
Attaboy.
All right.
Keep it in the family. That's good.
Nick Wright of First Things First said this week that the Jason Tatum hype is just a little too excessive, and this was his argument.
He's averaging 23.5 points per game. For some context, it's not quite as many points per game as notorious huge scorer Pascal Siakam is averaging, but it is more than DeMar DeRozan. He's shooting 44.8% from the field. It's just behind notoriously efficient player Zach LaVine, but it is ahead of Danilo Gallinari. He's shooting 39.8% from three. Now, that's not quite as good as Luke Kennard, but it is better than Jaren Jackson Jr. His player efficiency rating is 20.4. Now, it's not quite as good as Domantas Sabonis, but it is ahead of De'Aaron Fox.
All right, what's his name again, that guy?
Nick Wright.
Oh, Nick Wright. Boy, Nick Wright, that's obnoxious.
I just wish he wasn't yelling at me.
You know, but that's the quote unquote expert that last night got all these stats out so we could throw these names out. That's, let me just tell you something, okay? I'm not hot on this. Or what am I saying, that he's, if I think Tatum's going to be a great player, am I hot or not on this?
You're not.
I'm not. So I'm hot that he's going to be great. I'm not hot on this guy, what he just said. I mean, again, these experts just give you stats. They just give you numbers. They don't talk about the intangible piece that Jason Tatum brings to the floor. And I think when you watch this kid play, he's explosive. He defends. He understands the system he's in, and he plays within that. He is a special player, and he's insanely young. So, no, I'm not buying the quote-unquote expert's take. He's wrong. He will be a great player, and I think it's time to start talking about him, and you're going to see it pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The totality of a player isn't always in numbers, and when you want to talk about offensive efficiency and you know, this, like, what he needs to do as a scorer, what he has done as a scorer, if he's fulfilling the needs his team has and doing so, like, and also playing defense and doing all of the things,
yeah,
that's where some of these stats and cherry picking stuff that show he's actually more average than great. It also doesn't, like, these snapshots in time don't show you necessarily trajectory year over year. And it's, yeah.
Like, no, I'm 100% with you. And I'll say that he's proven to be an elite player because he's coachable. I mean, I don't look at Jason Tatum, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't watch a lot of Celtic games, but when I watch him, I don't look at a kid that's, you know, look at me and, like, I'm going to get mine. Like, that's not who he is. He wants to win. And he does what he has to win. And when you look at an athlete that's that talented that wants to play defense as well, you don't have that in the NBA anymore, folks. I find me a player that does both insanely well and takes pride in it.
Kawhi?
Kawhi.
That's why he's
And that's the kind of player Kawhi is, right? Because nobody wants to give Kawhi that respect. Nobody wanted to give Kawhi that because Kawhi was that quiet guy that just did his job well. They didn't want to talk about him because he wasn't out there, you know, pumping his chest and all that. That's Kawhi is just Kawhi. That's why this kid's going to be a great one. I'm glad that he's getting his due. And this guy, Nick, whatever his name is.
Nick Wright, Nick yelling Wright. At us.
Yeah, take a shower, buddy.
All right, so as you said, Jason Tatum is young. He's 22. He also, his first year, 14 points a game. Second year, 15 points a game. This year, 23 points a game. So he's on the upper trajectory as a scorer, and he does everything. And he's on a team that has a pretty solid amount of talent. So it's not like he's the only guy ever getting the ball and trying to score.
So, when you're talking about, okay, so he's only putting up 23 a game. Like, what's his shot total? Like the volume that he needs to get that is a different story, too.
And 22-year-old basketball players usually aren't at their absolute peak in terms of efficiency.
Right.
They're just still figuring it out.
He's not the prototypical superstar NBA player. I mean, he's actually a player that plays the game of basketball. You know, he's not just using his athletic ability to be special. He's using his system to be special. He does what he's supposed to do. I love guys. That's why I like the Celtics. That's honestly, I mean, I can't believe I'm becoming a Celtic fan.
Ooh.
I mean, I've never been a Boston fan of a Boston sports team in my life. I'm like, I'm Brad Stevens is bringing me in.
It's a brand new day.
It is.
Mm. Rams Weird. Fan Ralph came in and said, Nick is not always right.
Well, we know that. He just proved that.
He always has the W, but sometimes he doesn't. So, yeah.
I have one more.
Okay, yeah, one more.
I was going to say that's hot or not.
Well, we be quick, though. Let's go.
The Patrick Mahomes deal is great for the Chiefs. That comes from Charlie Casserly of NFL.
That's
Network.
Easy. Hot. Whether they win another championship or not, he is the player in the NFL. He is the guy people will pay to go see. I don't care if your team stinks. You want to go watch him play. Everybody loves watching Pat Mahomes play. I agree with him completely. Hot.
Yeah, I think ultimately you have to go hot for all the reasons you said, all the reasons we talked about to start the show. And like, given the degree to which the salary cap can go up, it's not like if you've locked in a player of that caliber for that long ahead of time, you're going to have more wiggle room down the road with cap space to acquire pieces around him. And that's also great.
You know, what's crazy is it's the biggest contract in the history of the sport, but it's the same percentage of the team's allowed cap space as the contract that Brett Favre got in the early 2000s. So it's not like these contracts are getting bigger relative to the salary cap. It's just the salary cap's going up. These teams are worth more and they can spend more.
Right. And you got the most valuable player in the game. Keep him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That's hot or not, guys. Don't go anywhere. We tie a bow on this show next. We'll be right back.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over. But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Today was fun.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it was good to see you again, man.
One week off felt like a real vacation, and now it feels like I'm really back.
I know, really, vacation for you, but then you had to work all week on the golf course, which, again, I don't feel that bad for
you. It was good to be back to doing something normal.
Yeah.
Like, that week is a busy week every year. It's a long days of work covering that, but, like, it felt like it's a fun week it's always a fun week. And it was even more fun this year.
So. Yeah, well, great coverage, like I said. So, anyway, big shout out today. Mark Murphy, the Boston Herald, talks some Boston Celtics. Great intake on that. What is going on with you, Jeff?
Insight
on that. We took some insight from that one. Listen, he feels confident about the Celtics, but as any Celtic writer is, they're always a little cautious about, they pump the brakes when you get too excited.
Yeah, measured.
And the Vermont amateur champion who Austin covered all week, Garen Poirier, joined us. What a story that was this week. An unbelievable putt to win. Huge lead blown, but then held on at the end to get it done. Just unbelievable story.
Yeah, and he mentioned a name, Dave Fanenstein, former executive director of the VGA. They were good friends. Dave died this spring of COVID-19. And so the VGA commissioned a new trophy, beautiful trophy. You can see pictures of it on the Free Press. And it's the Dave Fanenstein Memorial Trophy, so like that was extra,
poetic for him to win
for Garen to win that, yeah.
And then Ryan Matlack of ESPN Radio talked a little about his time in Vermont and what's going on with Mike Golic and his show down there. And I do want to get to the Green City Garage poll question today. What the results were? The Green City Garage poll question was: should the Yankees change their long hair and beard policy? Yes or no? And what do we got, buddy?
59% said no.
See, perfect. See, finally, someone agrees with me. Keep your policies, baby. Come on. That's what it's about. Just a little discipline. So being a Yankee, I love it. I love it. Good for us. Tradition's okay. Tradition isn't a bad thing. It's okay to have some tradition.
Did you just imply that having long hair means you don't have discipline?
Not at all. I'm just saying having a little discipline and how they... Well, maybe I am. No, that's not what I'm saying. But having a little discipline and saying, hey, look, this is the way it's going to be when you're here. It's like wearing a golf shirt on a golf course. There are rules all over the place. There are companies all over the place that have rules about appearance and what you have to wear.
No shirt, no shoes, no service.
Exactly. No shoes, no shirt, no problem. I think that's what Kenny Chesney said.
It goes both ways.
So when you're on the beach, that's a good thing. So anyway, guys, we are Sports Saturday. We will be back next week. This is the other local show on this station. We loved talking to you today. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. I think the rain, I think, is past now, right? I feel like I looked at the Doppler a little while ago, and the rain has moved
on. We're coming out on the other side.
Yeah, I think
it's supposed to be all the way done by 1, I think.
Yeah, and then I think it's supposed to be a pretty decent week next week. So enjoy your summer. Enjoy your weekend. And hey, guys, thanks for listening. We're Sports Saturday here on 101.3 The Game. Keep it here, because now you've got reruns of The Huddle. And there's nothing beats a nice Saturday afternoon in Arnie's voice. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's what I love to listen to. We'll see you next week.